branding, experience, conversation, promotion, powerful marketing, empowering small business to change their status quo. It's the internet show all about small business marketing. Jay Arrett hosts the brightest minds in marketing. Power to the small business.
Yeah, we're back. You probably were not expecting another episode so quickly after last week's episode, Get Seen, the online video episode with Steve Garfield, but there is a method to my madness. Hi, this is Jay Arrett, and I am a small business marketing coach and consultant in Waco, Texas. My website is themarketingspot.com, and the website for this podcast is powertothesmallbusiness.com. This episode of The Big Show is about turning your gut into a remarkable customer experience. Not talking about your innards here, talking about your instinct. Wanted to get you this episode today, that's why it's here so quickly, on Monday, June 21st, because this Wednesday, June 23rd, I have a free webinar on how to design your own remarkable customer experience, both offline, in the store, and online, on the website. My special guest is Cam Beck. He's an experience designer, online experience designer at Click Here. That's an agency that does work for Chick-fil-A, Amstel Light, among others. That's right. We bring out the big guns at the Marketing Spot, but we do it for the small business and the entrepreneur. Now, if you've attended one of my previous webinars, you know they're not a disguised sales pitch. You get real, usable stuff. Now, sure, I want you to hire me, but only if you need help getting it done. I don't want to hide stuff from you if you think you can do it yourself. So you can sign up for the webinar, which is Wednesday, June 23rd at noon Central Time. Sign up at my website, themarketingspot.com, in the events section, or directly at this web address, budurl.com. That's budurl.com/CE webinar. budurl.com/CE webinar. Hope you sign up. I'll also put a link in the show notes, which, by the way, are no longer available on the Marketing Spot blog. They are now at powertothesmallbusiness.com. That's the permanent home for this podcast, powertothesmallbusiness.com. By the way, still working on the site look, so it won't be pristine, but it will be functional. Hope to have you at the webinar. Now, on with the show. Sean Smith is co-author of three books, one of which, Managing the Customer Experience, helped shape the way I teach businesses to build their customer experiences, because it taught me that customer experiences must be managed, designed, directed. That's a concept that seems logical, but sometimes it gets ignored by entrepreneurs. The subject of this episode of Power to the Small Business is Sean's book, See, Feel, Think, Do, which talks about using your gut, your instinct, to create the experience. So let's dive in. And with me now on the Skype line is Sean Smith. He is founder of Smith & Co. and author of three books, and another one forthcoming. We'll talk about that later. But his three books are Uncommon Practice, Managing the Customer Experience, and See, Feel, Think, Do. And Smith & Co. is a... Well, how would you describe Smith & Co., Sean?
We focus on helping organizations define their customer experience.
Defining the customer experience. I like that a lot. Well, I've read two of your books, Managing the Customer Experience, and most recently, See, Feel, Think, Do, and that'll be the primary focus of our conversation here today, about using the power of instinct in business, but using that also to help define and then design your customer experience. Can you just give me maybe just a thumbnail review of See, Feel, Think, Do?
Yeah, I think what prompted it really, Jay, was that my... Feeling that over the last few years, with what we've seen in the recession and the focused on many organizations stripping out costs from their organizations and so on, is that we've kind of seen the ascendance of the bean counters. You know, many people who have with an accountancy background, nothing wrong with that, but have kind of been promoted into senior positions, and the focus in many organizations has been around the numbers, the cost focus, the analytics, the left brain stuff. And my view is that what we need to do is kind of redress that balance to get that pendulum to swing back a little bit more towards the intuitive, towards the instinctive, towards the customer focused, towards the experiential.
Why do you think it is, Sean? I mean, we want this research to back up our decisions. I mean, how difficult is it really for entrepreneurs to just follow their gut when making decisions about their business?
Well, I think the problem is that we give undue credence, if you will, to the academic view of the world, to the MBA view of the world. Mm-hmm. And actually what we undervalue is what I call DNA. So for me, when I look at organizations and when I look at great experiences, it's often more to do with the DNA than the MBA. It's often more to do with the passion than it is the intellect. And I think we need to, as I say, get that balance between the IQ and the EQ in organizations. And I think the trouble is that a lot of entrepreneurs sort of brought up to believe that the academic route, the MBA route, is the only correct route. And actually, if you go back to the beginnings of time, if you go back to the genesis of many wonderful organizations that we know and love today, great brands, and you look back at those founders, well, those were people that started on the basis of intuition. They saw a gap in the market and they went for it. They set out their stall and they developed their business from there. They had a great idea. You know, it's interesting. If you look at the wealthiest business people in the US today, I think the statistic that I saw was said out of the top six wealthiest business people, five of them dropped out of college.
Well, if you look at Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos, is making a lot of news right now because they sold for $1 billion or just about to Amazon. He wrote a book. But, I mean, he's selling shoes. That's not what he went to school for, right? And so he followed his intuition. So I think your point is well taken. Is we overestimate this importance on data, and I don't know why it is sometimes we just don't think, hey, we got the answer inside of us.
Well, even when the data is telling us something different. So if you take Tony Hsieh as a great example, we've got a whole chapter on Zappos in my new book. And I interviewed Tony a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that he was saying to me was that in the early days of Zappos, they had yet to make a profit. And they had a business model, which basically said that they had a drop delivery business model, which basically said that, you know, you would phone in, you would make your order, or you would go online to make your order, and the product will be shipped straight from the manufacturer to your home. Now, that is a very profitable model because there's no inventory, there's no stock involved, all of the risk is being taken by the manufacturer. So from an online retailer's perspective, that is a very attractive model. And 25% of their business was of that type, and it was the only profitable part of the business. But what Tony told me was, you know, he said, we took a look at it one day and we said, you know what, we're not in the shoe business, we're not in the retailing business, we're in the customer experience business. And what we're about is to create exceptional customer experiences. And all the time, we are not in control of the delivery. We cannot guarantee the experience. The only way we can take control of it is by actually shipping from our own warehouses. And so at that moment, they took the decision to stop that particular business process. And 25% of their revenues kind of went away. And it was the most profitable part of that business.
Wow.
But from that point on, he said they'd never look back.
Let's get into your book a little bit, See, Feel, Think, Do, because you've taken this intuition, this gut instinct that entrepreneurs, we know we have, but sometimes it's difficult for us to follow, and you've put it into a model you call See, Feel, Think, Do. Let's start very basic. What do you think is the best way to see? What do you mean by that, by entrepreneurs just seeing stuff?
Well, it's experiencing it through the eyes of your customer. You know, the native Americans had a saying which was about don't judge your neighbor until you've walked X number of days in his moccasins or her moccasins. Mm-hmm. And I think what they meant by that was, you know, you really have to look at things through the eyes of the customer before you can really form any judgments. And oftentimes in organizations, particularly larger organizations, particularly those organizations which an entrepreneur has started and then they start growing, you become distanced from the customer interface. You rely on your salespeople, you rely on your people to feed you that information, but you're getting it third party, you're getting it from a distance. And the trouble is that you start seeing things through the lens of the organization and through the way the organization is organized and its functions, as opposed to from a customer's perspective. Good example of that was a few years ago, Intuit, that make the TurboTax software. I'm sure many of your listeners will be users of TurboTax.
Yeah.
Their product development people came up with a new version, which was much more powerful, had lots of functionality that the old version didn't have. And they were delighted with it, you know, because it was just so much more powerful. But Intuit did some research, and they looked at the Net Promoter Score, in other words, the level of advocacy of their customers, and they noticed that sales and advocacy scores were falling off a cliff. And so they went out and did research. And the way they did the research, in fact, was they just sat in the homes of these consumers who had bought this product and watched what they did with it. And what they quickly realized was that by observing these customers in their own home, was the installation process was really not intuitive, which is interesting given the name of the company, Intuit. It wasn't intuitive. And the process of getting it up and running was a lot more complex than the previous generation, and they found particularly that new users' usage was dropping off, and so what they did was they went back to kind of the drawing board and they re-engineered the product to make the installation process a lot simpler, to make the first experience of usage a lot more intuitive, and guess what? Sales went back up again. And the point of that is that they did it through observing, through watching what customers were doing. And they could have had focus groups, they could have done quantitative surveys, and they probably would not have discovered that.
So it's kind of changing your lens a little bit. Yeah, you're interacting with customers every day, but you're changing your lens to say, you know, what are people actually doing? How can I change that to make it better as you're observing?
Yeah, and maybe scheduling some time to just spend out there in the field with employees, with customers, walking around the store, whatever it might be, without an agenda, just so that you get back in touch with direct touch with the customer base.
So you talk about the importance of empathy in the book, of feeling customers' emotions. You know, what does that get us when we do that? I mean, there's got to be a pretty broad range of emotions that customers feel.
Well, if you take an example of one of my clients, which is O2. O2 is a mobile phone provider in Europe, and it's the market leader by far. It's put on more new customers over the last period than all of its competitors combined. So it's been incredibly successful. And what they did with O2 is that they go out and they ask themselves, what's the piss-off factor? So if you'll excuse my language, they really want to find out what pisses customers off. And in the mobile phone business, in the telecommunications industry, there's an awful lot of piss-off factors. The industry has kind of created a whole level of bureaucracy and legislation and rules and contracts, which basically lock people in. And, most people don't stay with their telco provider because they love them. They stay there because they have to, or because of the hassle factor. So one of the things that O2 did was kind of observed all of this and went out and spoke to some of the more profitable customers, their valuable customers, and said, you know, what is it that really pisses you off? And one of the things that these valuable customers said, and by the way, by valuable, we're talking about people who are five times more profitable than the average customer because they're heavy users. One of the things they said, look, you know, what really drives us crazy is that the mobile phone business is hell-bent on acquiring new customers. So what they do is they try and tempt or woo new customers away from their current supplier by offering them a free DVD player or a better contract or free minutes or whatever it might be. So it's all about tempting these customers and trying to woo them away from their existing supplier. But they said, you know what? When you're an existing customer, when you're a loyal customer, when you're a valuable customer, nobody cares about you. You don't get the same deals. In fact, oftentimes the deals are worse. And so that was a level of insight and a feeling, if you will, that O2 really identified with. And what they did was something which I think was incredibly bold. In fact, bold is the subject of my new book. But they did something incredibly bold. They took these valuable customers and they said, you know what, we're going to reward you, we're going to value you, and we're going to show our appreciation, not by giving you points or discounts or any of that stuff. We're going to give you access to experiences that you could never otherwise have. And what O2 did was to, in fact, partner with a company called AEG to license what was called the Millennium Dome in London. Now, I don't know how many of your listeners would be familiar with this, but over the Millennium period, we built this huge, great dome in London, the East End of London, which just became a joke. It was, you know, a white elephant. It wasn't being used. It was soaking up millions of taxpayers' money and just keeping the thing from rotting. And what O2 did was to license this, refurbish it, put their name above the door. It is now the most successful entertainment venue in the world, bar none. Until his unfortunate demise, Michael Jackson was going to play 50 concerts there. But they have all the big bands. You know, Bon Jovi did a concert there a couple of weeks ago. And what O2 does is they've got a hospitality suite in there. If you're an O2 customer, they will text you and give you advance notification of concerts. If you're a valuable customer, they will often invite you for free or give you early access to tickets so that you're not fighting those phone lines with everybody else trying to get a ticket. You can get that rare ticket, that scarce ticket, because you get 24-hour early access to the line, whatever. So if you go to the football match, for example, they've got a hospitality suite there. You can go in there, you can have a beer with the players. So what they do is they create connectivity. In fact, their brand promise is, we're better connected. And what they recognize is they're in the business of connecting people to create better lives. It isn't just about locking you into a contract.
Well, now we come to the thinking part of your model.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, occasionally I like to get away from the office, from the house. In fact, I'll tell my wife that I'm going to go do some thinking, and I'll go to Starbucks or someplace like that and just take a book just to get away and think. Now, you say a lot of successful companies, they do a lot of thinking. You know, it's like you imagine somebody just like sitting in a corner saying, I wonder what I can think today. You know, help make this abstraction a little bit more tangible for us. What are we thinking?
Well, you know, one of the things that I fully kind of acknowledge and recognize is that your listeners are probably sitting there listening to this and saying, what is this guy on? You know, see, feel, think, do. I mean, you know, that is like, you know, come on, get out of here. You know, that's we do that naturally, right? That
right.
happens all of the time. We don't need somebody to tell us about that. I think a lot of powerful ideas, like a lot of powerful things, often it's the simple stuff that really works. But it's the simple stuff that we often overlook and forget. We get so caught up in the complexity of our lives. We get so caught up with, doing business, that actually the very simple things that cause humans to behave in the way they do get overlooked. And thinking is one of those things. Yeah, sure, we think all the time. We do analysis, we do spreadsheets, we do strategic plans. But how often do we actually sit down and think, what would it look like if it were better? What would it look like if we were to just change the rules? So a great example of that is Ray Davis of Umpqua Bank. This is an Oregon-based bank, been around for about 15 years, grown very successfully. And 15 years ago, it was a small community bank with 6 branches. And there were, you know, Ray said there was no reason to go to Umpqua. Why would you drive past 2 or 3 competitors, small community banks, to get to Umpqua? You wouldn't. So one day he was thinking about it and he said, well, why does a bank have to be like a bank? Thinking to himself, why does a bank have to be like a bank? And so he said, well, you know, how can we make this different? How could we break the rules in a sense of and make a bank something other than a bank? He thought about it and he came up with the notion of being a retailer. Why can't we be a retailer? Actually, if you think about it, we're selling products. We've got customers. We want them to come to our stores. We want them to have a great experience. We want them to buy stuff. But why do we have to go about it in the same way as a bank? So he came up with the notion of retailing. And all of the Umpqua banks are now called stores. When they hire people, they don't advertise in the financial services or banking press. They hire in the retail press. When they train them, They don't look for people with a previous banking experience. They look for people with a retail experience because they figure they can teach them banking. When they train them, in fact, they send their people to Ritz-Carlton to be trained because they reckon that Ritz-Carlton have, you know, very strong skills when it comes to customer service and customer focus and so on. And Umqua has now been very successful. It's acquired 21 other banks over the last 15 years. If you go into the stores, I don't know if you've ever been into one, but they look just like a fashion retailer. And Ray says he doesn't want people to come into the stores to do banking. He wants them to come into the stores to do shopping. So they've got places you can go in and have coffee. They've got interline access. So you can go into the store, you can sit down, you can have a cup of coffee, you can do online shopping, you can surf the net. And by the way, if the mood should occur to you, you can also check in, you know, check your account, or you can make a payment. But that isn't the reason for going into the store.
Well, Sean, your example there is a perfect example of what I like to call like norm changing or category shifting, where you take your business category or your business norms and you say, well, what if we were a different business? What if we were a retailer like you just said the bank is, or a fashion place? You know, that's one way to get out of these categories that we put ourselves in because we're in our industry and we're so abnormal within our own business that we can't think of stuff like this. So I think that your example there is just a perfect reason why we just need to get away and do some thinking and maybe just shift the way we think about our business and changing the norms a little bit.
That's right. I often say to my clients, you have more to learn and more to fear from your comparators than you do your competitors. Mm-hmm. I've been working with one very, very well-known fashion retailer over the last couple of years that have just done some extraordinary things. And when we first started working with them, they said, oh, you know, would you go and do some benchmarking for us and tell us how we compare against Louis Vuitton and Gucci and so on and Armani? And we said, sure, but we don't think you'll learn very much because actually we think that's a pretty undifferentiated marketplace. If you look at luxury retailers, most of them are doing it exactly the same way. We said, go look at Apple. Go and look at the Apple store. You're going to learn an awful lot more. Anyway, we went and did the benchmarking, and guess what? We were right. When we mapped the experiences of all the luxury fashion retailers were very, very similar. And you really needed to look outside of that business to see people doing innovative things. And what we did was, in fact, to benchmark some of those and help this particular client import some of those ideas into the business.
Interesting. Eventually, we have to put all this stuff into action, right? We read all these books, go to these conferences, seminars, we do the thinking. It doesn't always turn into action, does it? And differentiated action. What's the secret here? How can we do what we know we should do, what our gut is telling us to do?
I think part of it is thinking more broadly about the customer experience and being willing to differentiate and invest in those things that are going to enable you to differentiate and create that traction. A good example of that, I think, is if you take in the airline business, Virgin Atlantic, if you ask most passengers where they think the airline journey starts from an airline's perspective, they'll say check-in. So we believe that airlines think that our journey starts at check-in. And where do we think they think it finishes? Well, it's usually arrival, when you get your baggage. And so therefore, where do most airlines differentiate? Where do they focus their activity? And it's really all about the bit in between. So it's about, you know, more room, seat room, better check-in, whatever it might be. If you look at Virgin Atlantic, they decided to do things rather differently. So they, through their observation, identified that actually where the stress starts for us is when we leave our home or leave our office. Will the cab turn up on time? Will there be congestion on the freeway to the airport? Will I get there on time? And when we do get there, you know, it's all that hassle with security and so on and so forth. When we get to the other end, it's, you know, will I find my destination and so on and so forth. So what Virgin have done is to say, let's just take away all that stress. So if you're flying business class with Virgin, upper class, they'll provide you a car to pick you up from home or pick you up from your office, check you in the car, take you to the airport, and they promise you curbside to lounge in 10 minutes. if you're flying out of Heathrow, for example, curbside to the lounge in 10 minutes. And you spend time in the lounge, and that's a great experience in itself. When you get to the destination, they've got an arrivals lounge where you can have a freshen up, you can have a massage, you can have a shower, and they'll take you to your destination once again in a chauffeur-driven car. So what they've done is to invest in the processes, in the activities, in the infrastructure necessary to create a very different kind of experience. So the doing part is actually having the courage of your conviction, of being able to turn those ideas, those observations, those insights into a process that actually creates that different kind of experience.
And here's where you just have to kind of take, you know, sometimes you're just creating new ground here. You're designing your own experience, and this is where you have to break away from the traditional models, isn't it? This is where you just have to come out there and almost invent something yourself.
Well, that's right. And sometimes you just can't prove it before the event. You know, you can't research your way to that decision. You've just basically got to say, you know what, I think it's the right thing, and we're going to do it. Guess what? Often when you do that, then the returns come.
Hey, and that's what you did when you decided to become an entrepreneur anyway, right? There was no guarantee that your business would be successful when you started it. You just said, I know this is what I got to do, and I'm going to do it.
Absolutely, exactly right. Yeah.
Well, Sean, we're just about out of time here, but I know you're working on another book. Can you preview that book for us? What's coming up?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. It's called Bold: How to Be Brave in Business and Win, and it's a story of 15 brands. We've done a lot of research around the world, but these are 15 brands that are doing some bold things, that are changing the nature of their industry, that are changing the rules of the game. So it's organizations like Zappos, like Geek Squad, like Virgin Galactic, which is totally transforming space travel, Chili Beans in Brazil, which is an interesting retailer, Burberry. So organizations that are just pushing the envelope of what is possible, challenging the traditional ways of doing things, and differentiating in the process. And that's due out first quarter of 2011.
All right, we'll look forward. We want to learn more about what you do, Sean. Where can we find you on the web?
www.seansmithco.com.
SeanSmithCo.com. Okay, Sean, we appreciate your time here helping us see, feel, think, do. See, feel, think, do. Do it. Start transforming your instinct into a customer experience. I'll have a link to Sean Smith's website and the books in the show notes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. I'll also put a link to my free webinar, which, reminder, is this Wednesday, How to Design a Remarkable Customer Experience Both Online and Offline. It's a free webinar available on my website, registration available on my website, themarketingspot.com, in the events section, or just go to budurl.com/CEWebinar. Big thanks to Sean Smith and his books for helping us figure out the customer experience. Now, if you're not subscribing to this podcast in iTunes, please do so. It's free. It's easy. And also, if you haven't reviewed this podcast on iTunes, please do. It helps me out. You can review it by searching Power to the Small Business at iTunes. Then you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the internet show that's all about small business marketing. Power to the Small Business.
You've been listening to Power to the Small Business with Jay Arrett, the internet show exclusively about small business marketing. Please see the complete show notes at themarketingspotblog.com. You can also listen to the show online and subscribe in iTunes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. Never miss an episode of the internet show all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
And special thanks to Mary Lynn Foster of the Big Success Podcast for creating the opening and closing voiceovers of Power to the Small Business. You can find Mary Lynn at the Big Success Show, BIGGSuccess.com.